Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, April 8th, 2018. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 276. I have a super special return guest, comedian, podcaster, Brandon Collins of the Comedy Outliers podcast, Medium Popcorn podcast, sharing this conversation with you in a bit. Right now I'm going to talk to you. I'm sitting in my apartment. I just got off the phone talking to Brandon Collins, and it's going to be hot off the MP3, if you will. I never know what to say when I just finish talking to somebody and I do an intro, but basically this is going to be hot and fresh like Little Caesars. Should I brand myself the Little Caesars of podcasts? I don't think I should do that, but I would just say, I like DiGiorno, and I know Black Twitter has a problem with chain restaurants and name brand oven pizza. But fuck it. No, I'm just going to say DiGiorno should sponsor this podcast. Let's just say it that way. Anyway, this is a good ass podcast. I'm here recording this intro. I had a very interesting week. Drama in some regards, but at the same time, a change is going to come. I did have a great week doing comedy. I did the comedy school dropout show at Beauty Bar on Wednesday. That was fun. And then I did the show, the two laugh minimum show at Steel Stacks. I had a fucking blast. Shout out to the homie Darren Patterson for coming through and doing some time. Shout out to Dan Fitzpatrick, who hosted, Christy Curtis, who did a guest spot, and oh my god, Kirk Griffiths, who was also on the show. And I had a great time in Bethlehem, PA. Went to Perkins after the show with the homie Darren and his lovely wife. Perkins is pretty good. I just had chicken tenders. I figured, you know, we were either going to go to the Waffle House and or Perkins or somewhere, but I like to eat after the shows. And I don't really like to eat before shows. And after the show, Perkins was nearby, so we went there, and I just had chicken tenders, and my God, they were good. Chicken tenders and fries. I ate like a fourth grader, and I had a great time eating that. It was just a good time. And so in the spirit of Tiger Woods, we celebrated the post-show dining at Perkins. I got a show tonight, like a fundraiser thing that I'm going to. So I'll keep this intro brief. What else happened this week? I saw A Quiet Place. There's A Quiet Place review up with the homie Maranzio Vance, and that's exclusively on Patreon. So if you are a Patreon subscriber, you can listen to it. Also, what was pretty cool about that, I was driving back from Pennsylvania on Friday, and I was debating on, like, oh, am I going to go use my movie pass? Am I just going to drive you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to stop halfway in between my trip and go to another movie theater. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go. I want to go to Riverside. I want to go to the new AMC Dine-In that opened recently that you hear me blab about all the time. One of my favorite new theaters in near me. So I was like, all right, I don't mind paying $13. I'll just pay for the ticket. I'll get Stubbs points. It'll be all good. And they had a 12:15 show. I was coming in there at like, I got there like at 12:05. I was like, yes, I made it. I get to see all the trailers, the previews, all the cool stuff because I'm a nerd. And and I get there and they're like, oh, the 12:15 show is, it's like out of order. Something was wrong with the in the theater or some shit. So I said, okay, well, I'll just go hang around in the mall and go to the 1 o'clock show. And they said, okay, well, it's on us. The ticket is on us. And I was like, bet, that's awesome. So they, because they, you know, inconvenienced us, they gave me, there's a mom and her daughter. I don't know how old the daughter was. She couldn't have been no more. She's about as old as the kids in the movie, relatively young, and they did not want to go. So I ended up just going, getting a free ticket, and I bought a milkshake from the dine-in thing, an Oreo milkshake. It was pretty good. I enjoyed myself. So you can listen to that Patreon episode. It's really good. Maranzio, like I've said, Maranzio was on the on episode 27 in the first year, in my first year of doing the show, and one of the first dudes to take me on the road. Really heartwarming. He really makes fun of me during that episode, and he has some really funny stuff to say. And we talk about the movie, and then we talk about a little bit of show business stuff. So, like I've always said, they're not just movie reviews. It's not just this movie was good or this movie was bad. It was blah 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 blah. We're talking about some real shit. It's fun. It's funny. It's good. So subscribe to the show. Thank you for everybody that's subscribed so far. It really, really means a lot. It's really cool. Really excited about the stuff that the things that I wanna bring you folks. What else? Oh, because the movie was delayed, that gave me time to walk around the mall and spend money. So because I was had time to kill, I said, oh, okay, I'll go to Barnes & Noble and I'll get the 20th anniversary edition of Entertainment Weekly. And I got Katie Holmes on the cover. There's a dungeon with all the cast. There's one with all the cast. It's like a Dawson Pacey Joey thing, I think. But I obviously got the Katie Holmes one. If you know my stand-up, you know I have a bit that I have about Dawson's Creek. And so I took a picture of me holding the magazine, and I thought, oh, this will be kind of funny. Like, I'll make a little funny thing, and I'll post it on Instagram and Facebook. And I just wrote, this is a picture of Katie Holmes. And I say, oh, when your high school crush continues to stun on you after 20 years. And I thought that would be a little funny. And then people just went off because I have a lot of comedians on Facebook. The homie JL Covan says, that's a man's foot down there. She doesn't have any shoes on. He says she's got man. He said she's got man feet. 10 people liked it, reacted to it. And another comic, Josh Homer, who I need to get on the fucking show, who says that's a Sasquatch foot. And I write, I'm done with y'all. And then everybody's like going in on it and making fun of it, blah, blah, blah. And then people just going in and just going in, really crazy. And another comic, Ray Marshall, said he said should have came back for The Dark Knight. He'll never forgive her for that. I guess people didn't like. I don't know who people didn't like more. Was it Maggie Gyllenhaal or Katie Holmes that they didn't like in the new Nolan Batman series? I'm not 100% sure. So then, you know, some people, a lot of people kind of reacted to the picture and they liked it and whatnot. Then a friend from college, from undergrad, writes, she says, I won't say her name, but she says, I'll never forget how in freshman year you announced my name is Chris and I have a crush on Katie Holmes. And I was like, wow. I was like, did I really say that? And she says, yes, you did. And she said I gave her a nickname, which she still uses today. That was nice. But I didn't know I was that obsessed with that show. I knew I really liked the show and I liked Katie Holmes, but wow. So people, certain people remember you by those things. But I thought that was funny. But they went in. And so I was in Barnes & Noble and I was asking, I went upstairs. They have like two levels and whatnot. And I go upstairs to just look at the movies to see what's there. And this kid tells me, working there, he says, oh, yeah, we're getting rid of the DVDs. We're not selling DVDs anymore. We're moving to another part of the mall where the Cheesecake Factory used to be. Because Cheesecake Factory used to be in a different location. They moved it. And then their Barnes & Noble is moving to where the Cheesecake Factory used to be. And they're streamlining the store. So they're getting rid of, looks like they're just getting rid of all their media. And he says, all we have downstairs is just the Criterion stuff. And I had walked past it and I was like, okay, I'll check that out. And then I started to see all this shit that I wanted. Like they had the Criterion edition of George Washington, which is this independent film. It's, oh my God. David Gordon Green's, I think his first movie. I feel like it is. I think it is. But they had that, and I was like, oh, I'm tempted to. It was like $40. Criterion movies are just like these special edition of movies that they get the deluxe treatment where there's a different, they enhance the original transfer, or they might make it HD, the aspect ratio changes or some shit. And then they have interviews, audio commentary, all this cool shit. And I was like, I ain't paying $40 for this. And I was just looking through like some other movies. I was like, oh, this is cool. This is cool. And then I was looking and they had this, they had a Criterion edition of Election. And the night before I was talking to Darren and his wife, Kim, who is the author of Lock Gray Linked Blue, who I went to her salon a couple weeks ago, and she was asking us what our favorite comedies were, and one of them I named Election, and I was talking about how much I loved the movie, and I went on and on about it, and it just so happens this movie comes up in this it's at Barnes & Noble, and it's like $40 for the Blu-ray. I was like, ah, let me see how much it is on Amazon. It was like $24, and I was like, okay, I immediately hit buy on that. So I bought it and I watched it last night, and I watched, like, it was really cool. Like they, because the original, like, it had the Alexander Payne commentary, and that's, I think that's it, that it had, that's all that it had. This one has like a True TV, like 40 minutes about the movie, like a retrospective with some of the actors. Then they have like a Alexander Payne's like student film. And they've got like a Reese Witherspoon interview. That's like 10 minutes of her talking about her experience on the movie and all that stuff. So it's really great if you're a movie nerd. I don't think I've ever talked too much about Criterion stuff on the podcast before, but I have a couple. I think I have one of, maybe of the Royal Tenenbaums. Brandon and I talk a little bit about Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs, which I saw, and if you listened last week, if you know, I was on the Three Guys On podcast last week, and I mentioned it a little bit. I hadn't seen it 2 weeks ago or whatever. I hadn't seen it, but I saw it last week, and it's really good. It's technically sound, but then there's just the concern about the cultural appropriation and the way Asian Americans feel about that film. So I've been kind of reading up on that. And then I was like, ooh, they're kind of right. They're right about a lot of this shit, even though it's a very good movie. I can see why some people have issue with it. So there's some stuff If you look up Justin, if you just Google Justin Chang and Isle of Dogs, there's a good interview with him talking about it. He's got a review of it. He's a writer for the LA Times. There's another writer. I'll find it for you because I like the thing. Oh, man. Oh geez. You know, I'm following her. I just followed her on Twitter, so I can give you her name. Karen Hahn, who also wrote about it. And yeah, so I've just kind of been getting, just reading articles about it from Asian writers and critics and stuff, just kind of catching a vibe of what they're saying, and it makes a lot of sense. But it's still a good movie. When I saw it, I was like, ooh, it's like, God, I think I said this before. Like when I saw the trailer, I think I said this on Three Guys On, I said, you know, this looks really good. People are going to have a problem with this. I might've said that about this movie or something else, but it's apropos to Isle of Dogs, wherever I said that shit. And yeah, so I watched that election, and The Ice Storm is another film that I have the Criterion edition of, one of my all-time favorite films. So they just give the nerd treatment to some of these like critically acclaimed movies, and people just, it's good if you like the supplemental stuff and you still like DVDs. I bet some of those things you can probably find on YouTube if you're into all that streaming shit, but it's nice if you're a collector and you can get it at a decent price. But that election was good, one of my all-time faves. So I was like, why not? I'll get it. Yeah. So I think that's it, you guys. I think that's it for me. That's enough of me blabbing. Let's just get to Brandon. Brandon has got a lot of shit going on. He's got his Week at the Creek, which he'll talk about. That is April 20th, the last full week of April, April 23rd through 27th at the Creek in the Cave in Long Island City. It's from 7 to 8 p.m. So check it out. It's free. You don't have to buy any. It'd be nice if you support a local business, buy a drink or buy some food. The food is good there. Go see Brandon. He's got a show that I'm going to be a part of, Don't Think Once. That's on May 1st. So, yeah, a lot of cool shit. Without further ado, here's me and the great Brandon Collins. Enjoy it, folks. So you just finished watching Paterno?
Yeah.
How is it?
It's good. It's like, it's a little, it's weird. It's kind of very formulaic. It's not really anything new, mm-hmm. especially Barry Levinson. He directed it. So he's the guy who did like a Ray Count. And I believe he did Too Big to Fail.
Barry Levinson?
So it's very, yeah.
Oh, he the guy. Did he do Homicide?
I believe so. He also did like a, he used to do those old movies that with like a Paul Reiser in them.
Avalon?
He did Diner, right?
I think so.
Yeah,
he's got, he's got some good ones.
Yeah, he's good, but Pacino's really good in it.
Yeah. Why did it, you said it fucked you up?
Well, yeah, because you learn about the whole, how much he knew, Paterno knew.
Yeah.
So you're like hearing about, you know, he knew about kids back in the 70s and shit, and you're like, oh, well.
That defense was flames though, bruh.
That's what I'm thinking about. That's what I'm talking about. Like, that's also what messed me up too. Like the fact that so many people were willing to like, but football.
Yeah.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that it took us so long to realize, oh yeah, there was dozens of kids that were victims of this dude versus like the 400 and something wins that Paterno got.
Yeah, man. That money had to make that money. Those dollars coming in, that revenue from the boosters.
Yeah.
And those W's, man.
I understand, man. It's just like, you know, there's such a double standard, bro. Like how people make money in the moral, mm-hmm. you know, lines that they toe. Like Sandusky and Paterno were able to make all this money and doing what they did. But then like a brother trying in Staten Island trying to sell like Lucy cigarettes gets choked to death. You know what I mean?
That's a hell of a comparison, but yeah. I didn't know you were going to take it there, but I mean.
It's a bit extreme.
That's, yeah, man. You get the shit choked out of you for trying to hustle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, man, that's like the worst way to like end your day. Think about it. You're just like, man, I really need to make some money today.
Mm-hmm.
I do what I got to do, and then like you're dead.
Yeah. And it's not even that. It's not even, it's a petty crime. And you, even if it isn't, it's just, oh, hey, stop doing that. But you
don't, exactly. You don't have
to, it's just like, hey, guy, come on.
You don't have to do this right now.
Yeah.
Instead, just like three dudes going to pile on top of you because they're scared of your height.
Yeah, it's insane how, I mean, it's starting to just be, it's just like one of those things, well, which one did they kill? Like the guy, which one is it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's depressing. So if they'll kill you, you know, for no reason, they'll definitely screw you over because of the color of your skin. And I hate to, like, you don't want to use it as a crutch, but it's when you see these type of things happening day in and day out, it's like, it's hard not to fuck with your psyche.
Yeah, that's why, like, I've been working on a bit about this, about how I always, I don't know if you've noticed, I have, like, a lot of, like, weird graphic hoodies that have, like, either, like, cartoons on them or, like, really silly shit, like fries or something.
Yeah, you just had because, like, yesterday. It was
Batman the Animated Series, okay. Like, the rogue galleries of the heroes and villains.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that just in case, like, if everything bad were to ever happen to me, and be like, oh, what was he wearing? It'd be like a Batman sweater. Be like, oh, he couldn't have been that, you know, dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, he's all about the nostalgia. He's one of us.
He's a fucking nerd.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, can you do the respectability? It's like the respectability politics where you just pull your pants up, wear a sweater, wear, you know, dress like you want a job or something like that. And then, you know, you look at those like 1950s sit-ins and whatnot, the 60s or... And all that during the civil rights movement, all those kids were dressed to the nines. Mm-hmm. Like they looked fucking great. They had church clothes on, and they were still getting the shit beat out of them. So, like, it's no
Jesus Christ
hoses, you know, yeah, putting hoses on them and dogs and yeah, man. It's hard to get that W, man.
It's we're in a weird place, man. I was just thinking about I've been like reflecting on like a lot of hip hop and rap recently,
mm-hmm.
and I recently realized. Did you ever peep that like you know with Drake, Weeknd, like Kid Cudi, Kanye? They were like really going through like their emo phase.
Yeah, like, they were doing like 08, 09 ish.
Yeah, and I realized I was like, oh shit, like this is when brothers were really sad, and that's when Obama was in the office. So you can only imagine how like black artists feel now, like.
Yeah.
With Trump around and like, and all the backlash against like, oh, like it's no one wants to hear white stories anymore. You know, the world's getting increasingly diverse.
It's sort of like I think with those guys like Kanye and Cudi and Wale, like those guys when they were coming up, like the mid, like 05 to like,
yeah,
till now, like those guys. For the most part, they went by their first name, their real names,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking about real shit. And it was kind of like that shift from the gangster rap to the hardcore stuff to really shedding the facade of, oh, my life is so opulent, is all this stuff. And you got Drake being sad with all these girls around him or with all this money he's making. He's still pondering life. So it's just kind of showing you that a lot of this stuff, it doesn't really mean anything. That's like success and stuff like that. And it made me think like, you know, I went to your wedding in February and it was just like, oh yeah, that gave me hope. That was like, oh, maybe, maybe there is some good in this world. Like you can't always, it can't all be all bad, you know? And I came up in a household where, you know, I had two parents and everything, for better or worse, the good and the bad of it. But, yeah, it's one of those things that make you think, like, you know, we were talking about yesterday at brunch where it's like you kind of having somebody, people that have your back, whether it's a spouse, a partner or your family. It's like that it means a lot to help you combat this bullshit that you deal with every day. And it's even more like everybody goes through it, no matter if you're born into this world, and especially in the United States, you and you're a minority, you're dealing with a lot of shit. And you deal with a lot of bullshit too, especially if you're black.
Yeah, man, you do, and you deal with, like, depending on your circumstances, you deal with stuff that, like, can really, like, it really can make you feel isolated sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not gonna talk about who I work for, but I have a job right now where I get paid a salary that's, like, really good. Mm-hmm. And at times I have imposter syndrome where I'm like, do I deserve this much money? And then I might be up for promotion soon. You know what I mean? Like, and then it's like,
well, you do. Let me put a pin in that. You do, because you went to school for it.
Yeah, I know, but it's still like, you know, there's when I look at, like, for instance, our brunch, when it was like a bunch of, like, gray, black comics and artists that are just trying to, like, you know, make their follow their dreams. Mm-hmm. I'm looking around. I'm like, there's so few examples like that most of us have immediately where we have black people, particularly black men, that are making, like, the big money. Mm-hmm. Where that's like a normal thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I'm making a certain kind of salary, I'm like, oh my God, do I deserve this? Like, does this make, like, how do I, like, do they know? It's just weird. It's a weird, a new place to be in, especially when you don't have many people like that you can talk to about that kind of situation that aren't people of color.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So what you're saying is basically you should have paid for brunch yesterday.
What I'm saying is I was more than willing to pay my share. That's what I'm saying, brother.
No,
I will pay my share handily.
I'm messing with you, man. No, I understand that. Like, I had that experience last year being on set doing stuff where it's like, yeah, I trained for all this, and now you're seeing like the fruit of my labor come out in these little spurts where it's like, oh shit, I'm on set. It took me till maybe like the second or third gig to really settle in and be a little more comfortable. I remember doing a shoot, and the director was like, okay, you know the script, Chris, so let's just have a little fun. And I was like, oh, yeah, this shit is like, this shit is supposed to be fun. Yes. This is supposed to be fun. And I was like, oh, yeah, right. Because you feel like, oh, am I supposed to be here? Are they going to fire me? And you're thinking about all this shit. So I think that comes with any job, with any field, you know, like any like job where they depend on you to do something and you're supposed to do it. And it feels like, you know, when you do something, it's like you're not being valued for it. But mm-hmm. then when you are being compensated and valued for it, it does feel different.
And it's like foreign. It's a very strange feeling that you have to kind of adjust. Mm-hmm. And I still haven't fully adjusted to it too. Like, and there's more changes coming down the pipe where I'll probably have to readjust and recalibrate, and that might cause me more anxiety. So like, it just, it's a weird place, but that's why I really enjoy, like, when, like, you know, you and I and a bunch of guys get together and we really kind of like talk through some of the bullshit we've seen or, you know, successes we're having, like, because it's just reassuring that we're brothers in arms, no pun intended, but it's it's just dope, man, because like we talked about yesterday, I feel like in the stand-up comedy world, especially lately, there's just like this weird paradigm where, like, I feel like we're all like kind of in that middle, just about to break through. Mm-hmm. And then there's people that are above us that are complaining about like the lack of opportunities or whatever, but it's like you also seeing that some people get stagnant or very comfortable, and they're not willing to take the kind of risk that I think you need to make in order to do that breakthrough. And I think based on our conversations, like, we definitely are willing to do some risky shit. Because it's like, why not do it,
right? I think you know, I've said this hundreds of times on the show, but when I've been doing this podcast for about 5 years, and the more that I talk to people of color, even back 5 years ago, 2013, I was noticing that people were like, hey, I'm tired of kind of seeing this, the same shit on TV. There's no diversity. And now we're just starting to have that happen within the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And then now you're seeing people talk about what we've talked about in our own personal conversations off mic, on and off mic, where like people are like, hey, man, hey, hey, white guys, you're eating. You're already at the table. It's time for other people to join you. We're not taking any food off your plate, but it's time to just kind of hang out together. And I think a lot of people fear that. I was looking at some before we started the show, I was on YouTube looking at Braun razor reviews for my dad or whatever, because I get him an electric shaver. That's a fucking rabbit. YouTube can take you down these rabbit holes.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, what the fuck?
So, I've seen some weird shit on YouTube, man, just because I Googled like bats one day and I just ended up in a weird, weird place.
And I was looking at I'll have like the Jim and Sam show. Like, you'd be like, oh, that person. And then certain people, oh, that guy's on Conan again. That guy is on to the Tonight Show again. And they're talented. They're talented white guys. But it's like, well, let's see some different folks. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, man. It's, it seems like people are now starting to catch on to that.
Yeah, but I just want to go back to what you were talking about, how like some people like feel like, oh, like you get, I want to eat too. Mm-hmm. And so people sometimes have to share space at the table. They don't have to share the food,
right?
But they have to share space at the table. And I think that that's kind of like where we're at in society, right? Which is like when Obama got elected, it's kind of like, oh, other people now have these opportunities. Other people are also doing good that it based on just like, you know, my family's thought process or like our experiences. Maybe we don't think those people deserve a spot at the table, but they're getting it now.
Right.
And I think that kind of like protectionism is the reason why we had such a huge backlash a few years ago and why like people are really fighting back for quote unquote their America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting to kind of think about like, do we grow from that? Do we eventually turn people around on that? Or are we always going to have this divide where it's like a back and forth of the power paradigm?
I think we're always, just being black, we're always going to have to fight. It's never going to subside. And it's even when Obama was in office, it felt like racism was worse. And things seem to come to a head. And it's not his fault. But, you know, it just seems like it's getting worse and worse. And now that, you know, Trump's in office, it's galvanized a large segment of society to feel like they have cover and doing the things that they do. And it just feels like every day we're getting trolled. We get trolled every day with bullshit, whether it's at your job, whether it's like just on the news, whether it's with these ads, like some fucking Heineken ad or that people were mad about. But then people get mad about shit all the time. And you think about like, this is, people don't have empathy. I think about like Isle of Dogs. I saw that last week.
Oh, was that good?
It's really good, but it's problematic to people of Asian descent, especially people that are Japanese. And I've looked at I've read a few articles. I've read, you know, interviews and stuff from people that were speaking their piece on it. And I was like, yeah, I could see that. It's like you have these Japanese people in the movie and they're second class citizens in their own fucking country.
Mm.
And like they're secondary characters. And it's like, ugh. And then there's like a white character voiced by Greta Gerwig is like the white savior. And I'm like, but them dogs look good though. That stop animation joint is flames. You know what's crazy?
Yeah, yeah. You know what's crazy is I feel like Wes Anderson, like he has the best intentions, probably so far removed, doesn't even see it. Like never even thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure he hasn't. And then he's got like a couple of Japanese actors in it and just somebody that was a co-writer or whatever. But somebody called him, somebody called him a cultural magpie, where he just like takes it and doesn't really, let me see if I can find this, but, it's disheartening. Cause there's a, I was messaging a woman on Facebook. She hit me up. She's like, "Oh, we went to the same theater. I went to see it, and I went to the second show." And I was like, "Oh, what did you think?" And she's like, "Oh, I thought it was great." And and I was like, "Yeah." I was like, I thought it was great too." But and then she mentioned like, "Yeah, you know, I noticed it was like some racial stuff. Like people were upset about it." And then she's like, "I didn't see it." And she is, I think she's Jewish. So, you know, she didn't see it, but I sent her a couple of the articles and she was like, "Okay, I'll check them out." But like, you have to, cause I went to see it in like suburban Westchester, and it's at like a non-for-profit, my favorite movie theater, Jacob Burns Film Center. And it was like a small theater. It was middle-aged to senior citizens, white people, and me, and a couple kids. They were partying, man. Like they were having a good time. They was laughing. It was like, "Oh my God, it was good." And it was really good. But it's just like, you know, it's like when your favorite rapper or your favorite artist does something great, but then he beats the shit out of his girlfriend. Or
just marries a Kardashian.
Or something like that. But it's just like, it's like, fuck, like. It's like, or on some Killer Mike shit where he says some stupid shit about guns. Yeah, yeah. So it's like, we have to, I don't know. I just think we have to be considerate. Like you can obviously understand the skill and craft that's put into this work, especially something like Isle of Dogs. And it's really cool, but it was just like, I see where people have problems with this shit.
But how far as an artist though do you like go to get the sign off from like a certain, you know, culture or something like that? Like, I'll give you an example, right? So I'm working on I've had this horror script idea in my head for a long time. Finally put it on paper. I've been doing a lot of research about various Native American tribes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But this group of Native Americans is like it's a pivotal part of my story.
Yeah.
But it's also like, do I have, like, who would I go to get the sign off on my script and my story? So if I were to ever, you know, actually make this project, I don't like culturally offend anybody.
You talk to a representative of that community.
What if that's not the representative for all of the community? You know what I mean? Like, that's almost like getting a sign off by like, what if like a white person had a project that was all about black people? And then they thought the sign off for that would be Al Sharpton. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you can't please everybody.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think if you have, you kind of do what Taylor Sheridan did with Wind River.
Okay.
Have you seen Wind River?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We did a review on Media Popcorn for the Patreon.
Okay.
We really liked it. Yeah. Cause was it you that put me onto Hell or High Water? And then Justin and I watched it and loved it. I think it might have been you who was telling me about
probably
it.
Probably me or JL.
Yeah, it was probably you.
Yeah.
We talked to you a lot more.
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of have deference and a reverence for the culture, and you kind of do your research, and you talk to these people, because it's only gonna give your script. The script is the skeleton of the whole piece, and
yeah.
It's you hire actors and performers that are going to put forth a more informed performance. Like, so the more that you know about something, the better off you are. But it wouldn't help to have, you know, people sign off for, you know, I know that community that they filmed Wind River in, like he had. I just remember when JL and I discussed it, I was talking about how he was just talking about ingratiating himself into that community, and that he got that cosign. So there's things that you can do, and it seemed like to some degree Wes Anderson had it. And I'm not trying to trash the film, but I'm saying like I wanted to see it. I like his stuff, you know.
Me too.
I dig his a lot of his work. But at the same time, I also want to be aware of other cultures and what they say about it. Because when I was listening to it was Justin Chang of the LA Times, and I believe it was Amy Hahn that let me see. Fuck, I don't want to be saying the wrong names. But he was talking.
Don't worry, I mess up names all the time.
And then they light your ass up for it, too.
They do, man. I don't know. Yo, that Black Panther episode, I got so much shit. But I was like, if you've listened to the show even for like 2 months, you know I'm terrible at pronouncing names.
Yeah.
I'm so bad at pronouncing some things that Tati thinks that my English is not my first language. She's like, you had to have been born with some other thing in your brain. Because the shit that comes out your mouth does not make sense sometimes.
So it's a 13 minute interview between LA Times film writer Jen Yamato and Justin Chang, and they talk about Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs. Is Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs cultural appropriation or appreciation? And they just talk about it, and yeah, man, it's something. It's interesting because the fucking kid, the kid's name, his name is Atari, and it's just like, yo, like, come on, young, like, really, this is what we're doing right now. So I felt some kind of way about it, and I was just like, let me see what it is. Yeah. And I watched it. I was like, this is really good. And I was like, go ahead.
I definitely look forward to checking it out. Like, Fantastic Mr. Fox, I think it's one of the most overrated films, underrated films of the past, like, what came out, like 10 years ago, I would say?
Something like that.
I think that movie's great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's so weird.
It's weird, and it's really good, though. 2009, almost 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Damn, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Animation's good.
Yeah, it's better than a lot of the. I low key enjoyed. Nah, fuck it. I enjoyed it more than Ready Player One.
Okay. Yeah, I thought my problem with Ready Player One, and you and I talked about this a little bit off mic, is, you know, I read the book and I remember, like, it's such a page turner for me. Like, I remember finishing that book, I think, in like 3 days.
Okay.
I just like knocked it out. I was like, this is a really good book. I was like, I know Hollywood's going to try to make it to a movie, and it's going to be, I honestly thought it was an unfilmable story.
Okay.
Because so much of it's in the video game world, so you have to have amazing graphics. And the first few previews I saw Ready Player One really gave me pause, because I'm like, this looks okay, but definitely not the level that, if you're going to be in this video game for 85% of your story, not to the level I thought. But then I saw it, and I was like, oh, shit, the graphics are actually really good.
Yeah.
But it's still, like, they did a lot of weird changes. But didn't quite make sense. I thought the acting was very inconsistent. We did a review on Patreon for Media Popcorn on it.
Okay.
But the only good part about it that really was like different, that wasn't in the book, that I wasn't expecting, was when they went to the Overlook Hotel in the middle of the movie. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna spoil it too much, but that was like really dope. That's the first time when I was like, oh shit, this is really cool.
Yeah.
But then,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, what were we gonna say?
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say it was the first Spielberg movie where, and I'm a huge Spielberg fan. I wrote him a letter when I'm 7 years old. I love the guy. But it's the first film, and he's done a lot of. He did. He, well, not him specifically. Amblin Entertainment. Yeah. They, see, I can't pronounce shit.
Yeah.
They wrote me back.
That's cool.
But Spielberg, it was the first Spielberg movie where I was genuinely bored throughout most of it.
So I guess you didn't see The Post.
No, I did see The Post. I've seen a lot of his like slow Oscar burn films, and they're fine because that's sometimes what he does. So I'm never bored by those. It's just this was the first one where I was like, there's so much that's supposed to be going on in the story, and I'm genuinely like just bored and kind of want it to be over.
there was it kind of took a while to end. I saw it in 3D because I only saw it in 3D because I. That was the only time that I could see it in before
yeah.
a show that I had or whatever. But Yeah, it was fine. I don't know. They were trying to like make comparisons to, I don't know, maybe it beat Black Panther that week or some shit when it first came out. But I was
It did. But Pacific Rim had beat Black Panther before that, which I was happy because I was like, at least that stars a black guy. So
yeah, I still haven't seen Pacific Rim.
Me neither. I wasn't excited about it. Like, it just looked like another generic sequel.
Yeah, I heard John Boyega's great in it. Like, you know, I'm gonna see it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel like, you know, I'm just like, there's other things.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on? I know you see like a lot of like you go to selective movie theaters mm-hmm. when you can, because like I went on a little mini rant on our recent episode about this. I'm like really frustrated with movie theater audiences these days. Like, where I'm like an old grumpy man.
Oh, dude! Are you talking about the way that people behave in the theater?
Yeah, like they talk to each other. There, some people answer phones. Some people are always on their phone. Like, even if there's nothing going on, like even if they don't have any messages, they'll just take out their phone and start going through apps.
Oh yeah, I hate that. I usually try to go to the movie if I can go the earliest as possible, like an 11 or a 12.
Okay.
When I saw A Quiet Place last week, I just I had the day off and I just went. It was like a 12:15 screening, and something was wrong with the theater. So I said, okay, I'll do the 1 o'clock, and they actually gave me a free ticket. So that was pretty dope. it was great. It was only like 8 to 10 people in a huge ass theater, and nobody really caused any problems. But if you're going to these late screenings, if you're going to these 8 o'clocks or these premieres and stuff, you do kind of run the danger of people, you know, pulling out their phones or talking or some shit, or people sitting directly in front of you. When I went to go see Acrimony, I was sitting in the back, and then these two women sat directly in front of me. There were plenty of other seats to sit in, but they sat directly in front of me, just, and they were kind of, they're a little chatty, but it wasn't too bad. Or you go to somewhere like Alamo Drafthouse where they fucking kick your ass out.
Exactly. That's what I would want to do. But the closest one to us is like a good hour on the train.
Yeah, that's because you know what I mean? You guys have the Kaufman, right? Kaufman.
Yeah, we have Kaufman, which is like hit or miss. Like sometimes the audience is, depending on the movie, like if it's Star Wars or a Marvel movie, it will be dope.
It can get kind of hood, right?
It can, but like it can be fun if it's a blockbuster that holds everyone's attention. Like there's never any problems, right?
Right.
But if it's like a film, like the thing that makes me nervous about seeing A Quiet Place today is a lot of people are going to go just because of the hype and because it's getting a lot of buzz, but they may not know it's a silent film. Essentially, these people are just signing all the whole movie.
Yeah.
And you have to read subtitles probably, so they're going to be like, I could see a few people opening, taking out their phones, and being like, this shit's boring.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, there's a half hour and a half of this. So, like, you're going to have to just buckle in.
Yeah, you got to let some of that shit go for an hour and change. I like the, you know, the way that our culture is set up right now. It's just like, oh, my phone. I mean, I fall victim to it, too, but I'm not taking my phone out like that, you know.
Yeah, I went on my honeymoon cruise, had no cell phone access for, like, 3 days. It was the best 3 days ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because eventually you get used to not having your phone around.
Yeah.
Like, I had to retrain myself when we got back on land on, like, using my phone again. Because I was just like, I didn't have any use for it. I didn't need it.
Yeah.
It was great.
That makes sense. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say it allowed me to enjoy the trip more and enjoy the people around me more.
Yeah.
You know, like. We had people at our dinner that still had cell phone access because they paid for the Wi-Fi on the boat, mm-hmm. and they never talked to each other during dinner because they were just on their phones watching videos and stuff.
Yeah, that's not the purpose of the trip. You kind of want to be with exactly. the person you're there with. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. It's our culture, man. Got to have our phones. Got to have our apps.
I know. Everyone's just, they need something. They need their security blanket.
Yeah, we're tethered. We're tethered to our fucking phones, bro.
We all were shitting on Charlie Brown, but we all became a bunch of Linuses.
Yeah, yeah.
Just sucking our thumbs.
Mm-hmm. So what are you watching these days? What's got you excited? What have you been enjoying?
Man, I've been enjoying Atlantis so much this season two.
What'd you think of the Teddy P episode?
Teddy Perkins. Oh my god. That episode, my job was just open drop the whole time. I'm just like, this is just so out of control. But then you're like, Donald Glover's just so weird. And I love that he's like, he's got this platform now where he's like, yeah, I'm just gonna show you guys how fucking weird I am. Like constantly. Like I'll keep pushing the envelope till eventually you guys are just like, please stop. And I'm really glad that Lakeith Stanfield got his own episode.
Yeah.
Because the whole season, I was kind of like, man, there's barely been any Darius in this whole season. And that he got his own episode and, like, you saw some growth to that character. You saw different sides of it. Yeah. I really like that. It's like almost like, yo, we've been seeing you out here in Get Out and these other movies, like, killing it. So we're going to give you your own episode where you carry the whole thing.
You
get to show different emotions.
Yeah. And he's got that Sorry to Bother You coming out in June or July.
July, I think, yeah.
He's one of those dudes, I first saw him, I've had this conversation a couple times on the show, where he's really fucking talented, and I saw him in Short Term 12.
Yeah, yeah, I remember you and I talked about that, yeah.
And that performance, like, because that movie was so good, every time it teetered on the line to being really sweet and saccharine and corny, and just when it would get to that point, it pulled away. And he was definitely a part of that. Like his role, he was really good. So to see him like level up and keep, to see his progression in his career is, it's really fun to watch. And Darius would be the only character that could be in that episode because, a Paperboy would have left and Earn would have left too. So.
Yeah, and Paperboy had his great episode with the barber the week before, so they're really doing some cool things with that show. I really like it. I also hope that when Donald Glover feels like it's time to end it, he ends it.
Oh, I think he's that type of guy that probably would, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like the Aziz Master of None thing, because I think he did an interview before all that shit came out, where he was talking about Master of None, and was like, he's like, yeah, man, I really honestly don't have any new stories to tell, so Master of None may come back. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good show. I think as an artist, I think that's the best thing that he's ever done. Like his stand-up, the first special was good.
Second one was not good. Second one definitely was weak. When he went to Madison Square Garden, that was a step in the right direction. But yeah, definitely agree. His first one was probably his best one.
Yeah, because I remember seeing him at, like, Lolita Bar on the Lower East Side, and he just, like, fucking leveled the place. But I think it's just that, like, that was a time of, like, well, I got to be like Louis and try to do a special every year.
Yeah.
Or, like, I don't know. I think that's people kind of got caught up in that shit.
Louis. It's interesting getting Aziz never put anything creepy in his work, though. That's the weird thing about like Woody Allen and Louis, right? Is that Louis actually had episodes that were like kind of hinting at the crazy perverted shit he kind of does.
He was showing us who he was. He was telling us, telling on himself, I guess.
I feel like that's like some crazy shit that black people could get away with. Like you can have OJ have his own show where like at one episode, one of the characters murders his wife and ex like boyfriend.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that. You could even get arrested the next day.
Now, did you like that? What did you think about all the theories and stuff on that, that Atlanta episode six?
Oh, the Teddy Perkins about the Michael Jackson, Marvin Gaye thing.
Marvin Gaye, Prince, all of
that. Yeah, I thought that was cool. What was the Prince thing?
The elevator stuff. Because
like, Prince. Oh, okay.
He died in the elevator. There's a museum in his house now. Like it's like all of...
Yeah, he put a lot of all the black artist shit that like really had to... That went through some heavy shit growing up into that movie, into that episode.
Yeah, and then people were saying that Teddy Perkins was Benny.
Yeah, I got that too.
Yeah,
the other one was the brother
or the dad, like, maybe.
Ooh, that's a good theory. I definitely knew he wasn't Teddy. That's for damn sure.
Yeah,
But Dante thought that he was the same. That's the same person. But then when you saw the dude down the basement, that would make sense if it is the father, because that goes into the Marvin Gaye connection.
Yeah,
with like his father killing the son. So that would make sense.
That's fucking crazy, dude. That happened to Marvin Gaye.
Well, yeah.
Well, yes. All of them, but just like Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, and the parallels obviously with Michael Jackson. I was like, oh boy. Yeah. Once you saw the pictures of Benny as a kid, and you're just like, oh no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It baffled my mind that people couldn't tell that was Donald Glover in whiteface, though.
I kind of got fucked up because I was doing a show that night, and I didn't get to see it until the following day. Mm-hmm. And then I think I saw something on Twitter where Donald Glover was Teddy Perkins, and I was like, who the fuck is this? Because I hadn't seen the episode. Yeah. So I was like, oh, that kind of ruined it. But I guess if you look at it long enough, it's just like, I mean, yeah, that's him. It's pretty fucking
so weird.
Pretty fucking cool. Well, his Derek comedy stuff was pretty crazy and out there. And then the mystery team was kind of weirdly funny and cool, so.
Yeah, and on Community, he was always like one of the far out people on that show too.
Yeah, and I think it's cool because I know like a lot of people, they've grown to love him. A lot of his shit, like, because I remember when he first came out, it was a handful of people that like, you know, like, because this was when Twitter started to grow, like 08, 2009 and on, and you know, like that's right around the time where Camp came out in 2011, but before he was doing those mixtapes and everything.
Yeah, Cul-de-sac and stuff that were actually pretty good, but you were like, damn, this nigga, like, he's like trying to be a rapper. Okay.
He had some good songs. Like, he had, like, you can pick and choose, like, different records that you like, but, like, I think when he started to get the, like, the Freaks and Geeks shit, like, that EP, the joint with the leaves on it and shit. Like,
he
started to kind of make a, there was like some transitional shit where it's like he wasn't trying to sound like Lil Wayne anymore.
Yep.
And it wasn't all nasally and stuff like that. But I remember just like, I was like, oh, I like this dude. And I met him a couple times, like at the Knitting Factory and at a party or something. And he's always kind of like a shy guy.
Yeah, he's said like how much he doesn't really like talking to people. He says he's not a big fan of people.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy though that he was able to build up a fan base under just Childish Gambino. There's probably still some people that don't know that he's Childish Gambino.
You think? No, not at this point.
I mean, now because of Redbone and everything, but like I remember like a few years ago, people still didn't put two and two together. So he had his own fan base under Childish Gambino. His own fan base under Donald Glover, the actor, and then his own fan base under Donald Glover, the comedian.
Yeah.
And so now he's getting like all these three followings to kind of merge into like, you know, watching Atlanta mm-hmm. and like fucking with him. I think he's the reason why if Han Solo does make money, it's like going to be because of him.
It is. And I want that action figure too. I got to get the young Lando. Because I don't really, you know, part of me is like, well, they fucking killed it with Rogue One. And I know I remember you and Justin talking about it like last summer. I remember this because I was driving to a gig upstate, like a casino gig that I had, and you guys were like, "Oh man, they're changing directors and shit." They're saying that dude couldn't act. What were they saying? He couldn't act or something?
Yeah. So what ended up happening? There's some clarification the past few weeks. Is like apparently the studio wanted. They didn't know exactly what kind of Han Solo they wanted. Mm-hmm. So in order to get like, in order not to be play as safe as possible, they pretty much just wanted the actor Alden to just do a Harrison Ford impression. Mm. And he was having a lot of trouble doing it. So they got him an acting coach.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty much what it was. But I mean, it still sounds like a disaster. Brian Koppelman called This Is The Moment. He has a dope podcast. You should definitely check it out. He had Tony Gilroy recently on who kind of hinted, I guess he's still under like, contract where he can't talk fully about all the shit he had to do to save Rogue One, but he hints at how much of a clusterfuck it was. Mm. And like that he had to do a lot of rewrites and extensive reshoots in order to fix the movie.
Damn. It's going
to be. He had to go on, like, I think he did like 9 months of work or something like that. And he said, when I came on, there's a director's cut of the film. Mm-hmm. That's how much work I had to do. Shit. Like, just imagine you're a director, you finish the film, you think you're all good. And then the studio's like, so not only do we have to do reshoots, we're actually going to take you off your own film.
Fuck. And I guess they had to pay him royally, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Tony Gilroy only got a screenwriter credit.
I think it's going to make some money. The trailer's supposed to drop today. We're recording this on April 8th.
But
the trailer's supposed to come out today. So, I mean, I'm going to go see it at Star Wars. And I think you're right. I think a lot of black people will go see it because of Donald Glover.
Yes, definitely.
I just hope his role is substantial. Because, one, like, the Star Wars shit, like, you have to be having these internet water cooler conversations with people, or you have to have some knowledge of it to talk about it on a fucking podcast. So, like, we're going to go see it.
Yeah, definitely.
But the draw for me, yeah, it's like it's Star Wars, but then, well, let's see what Donald Glover's going to do. You know?
Yeah, I worry that he's not in it too much, but we'll see what the new trailer shows us. But
yeah,
I can see him not having as big of a role as he would hope.
Yeah, I like the fact that he won people over too, because I saw people trying to hate on him early on, like in the late aughts, where they he's not that cool, fuck him, he's just
it's tough, man, like, I think it's like a competitive thing, right? Like, especially if you're an artist yourself, like, seeing someone who's that talented. I was the same way with Michael B. Jordan, right? Like, I'm like, man, I've seen this kid since The Wire. I'm like, he's all right. And then, like, I'm just like, you know, watching his career progress, and he's in all these great movies. He's really killing himself. Like, and especially when it comes to Ryan Coogler,
yeah,
they have a great relationship where they push each other to, like, be the best they can. And so, like, seeing him in Black Panther, I was like, damn, he was really good in Black Panther.
He's good in pretty much everything. I knew that he's had some, like, I liked him in Friday Night Lights, and I thought he was
great. He was really good in Friday Night Lights.
Really good in Parenthood, his arc or whatever. But then,
like, is Parenthood worth checking out?
It is, but it wears out its welcome the last two seasons. I think they went on two seasons too long. But overall, it's a good show. I mean, I think that's the basis for This Is Us. But I think I can't really speak on This Is Us.
You don't watch it?
No, because it's not that I don't like it. It's just like there's just too much TV.
It's so good. It's so good. It's the first show that's ever made me cry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There's episodes with Sterling K. Brown, man, that just, like, because I connected with it too on another level, on a personal level.
Sure.
That, like, just broke my heart. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, man. That show, it's Parenthood. Is not on that level where it's going to, I don't think it'll make you cry, but I think This Is Us was a good replacement for Parenthood, I would say.
Okay.
I've seen a couple episodes, like maybe three or four of them. And it's not like, and I did like the show, but it was just kind of, you know, hard to keep up with all the other shit that's going on.
I keep watching, man. Beth is a beauty to behold.
Who is Beth?
Sterling K. Brown, Randall's wife.
Yeah, she played Louis's ex-wife.
She did.
Okay, all right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's gorgeous. I guess I kind of feel that way about Brian Tyree Henry. I don't hate Paperboy. I don't hate on him. But right now he's doing, like, one of my favorite plays on Broadway. Lobby.
Yeah, man. I didn't realize he went to. Did he go to Yale for acting?
He's in that Yale Mafia, man.
Yeah, yeah. He was in the Book of Mormon original cast.
Yeah, he's a talented dude, man. I auditioned for Yale.
All right.
In 02, I didn't get in. But there was one dude that he had auditioned and didn't get in. Went to school with me at Roosevelt for the first semester. He was my roommate. And then he auditioned again for Yale, got in, and left Roosevelt and went to Yale.
And how do you feel?
I made my peace. You know what, man?
Yeah.
I feel like I made the journey I'm on the journey that I was supposed to be on.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Not even to sound corny or not even to sound like I'm fake, not bitter, but I think it whatever I went through in my 20s is what got me to this place today of being somebody that that has accomplished the things that I've accomplished. You know, sometimes it's easy to look at somebody else's career who's more successful and say, like, fuck, man, fuck this shit. But you don't know what that person did to get to where they are. You don't know what things had to happen for that person to be where they are. So it's just you can only I'm enjoying the journey, man. Like I think if fame would have happened to me a lot earlier, I might be a different person. You know, maybe I would be a shittier person. I don't know, but I'd like to think that I would be, okay with certain things. But I've just looking back, like I've appreciated it, man. You know,
definitely.
Yeah, it's been fun to get to, you know, do certain things that I've been able to do, and you know, hopefully more is down the pike. But I think. I never thought that I would have, if I was going to have success, I never thought I was going to be like, oh, you're going to be fucking famous and I'm going to be Will Smith. You, when you're younger, you think that shit.
Yes. Yeah,
but I think in the back of my head, I was just like, God, if I could just be somebody that worked. And like, I think always, like, it's always been in the front. It's always been, I don't know how you say it, but I've always felt like, I look at somebody's career like, oh, maybe I could be the black John C. Reilly, where it's like, if I was at, like, if I was at Target, I think people would probably say, oh, you were in that thing. I'm like, yeah, yeah, it was me. Hey man, stay in school, you know, like some shit like that. But I don't think I would get mobbed. Like people would, you know, if I get to the level where it's like, oh, I can do this. I can be the third or fourth lead in a movie. And then maybe I could be on a network show where I'm playing a cop or a doctor. I think that was the dream for a long time. You know, it's just like, I could be that guy and then, you know, do this or X, Y, Z.
Yep. But
now that I'm a stand-up where it's like, oh, if I booked certain roles and got enough notoriety, I could do the Funny Bones. I could just tour and then just keep growing and keep working on the craft. And keep trying to elevate. Like it was never like you dream of like your Oscar and your award shit. You can't help but to not have those desires. But I think you just gotta you gotta just keep working.
Exactly, man. Sometimes, you know, reality comes, you know, clarifies a few things. Like I've always dreamed about, you know, you just mentioned Oscar. I'm writing a lot of screenplays lately.
Yeah.
And I remember Mike Brown hit me up on Oscar night. And he was like, Jordan Peele just won your Oscar.
I always say like that's kind of like your older brother because you guys favor each other a little bit.
Yeah, I've been told that ever since the Key and Peele show. Obviously, like Mike Brown and I, like we got called Key and Peele a lot, but
right.
Jordan Peele. The more I get to learn about him, the more I'm like, oh wow, we really do have a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
Like if I ever met that guy, I think it would be like a kindred spirit almost.
Yeah, and he seems like a cool dude. And he's somebody else, like, where people, like, even, like, you know, Dave Chappelle was like, oh, he stole my show. And then when he won the Oscar and shit, like, because that's a little picture of him, of Dave Chappelle hugging him and Jordan,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, shit, okay. I don't know, man. Like, because I have a bit about it. I think I was working on it when I was doing my week at the Creek.
Uh-huh.
What you're going to be doing soon. When is that? In April?
Yeah, it's going to be April 23rd to April 27th, man. It's going to be, you've inspired me to do that, but get to what you were talking about and then we can talk about the weekend of Creek structure.
We can talk about how I inspired you after this. I'm sure the listeners will love that. But no, it's one of those things where it's like, I was working on like dreams and show business and like, dreams getting like narrowed down. Like my life didn't turn out the way that I thought it would or the way that I wanted it to, but that's not always a bad thing. you know, just because it didn't happen the way that you thought it would, and then you kind of feel like, and at the same time, it's a little bit of, it's even more clarity, I think, at times. I don't know, man. I've been blessed. My mom said, so I've been lucky. Mama said, you ain't lucky, you blessed, nigga. You know? But it's one of them things, man. Now talk about how I inspired you.
Yeah, man. Just you gave me the opportunity to host your week at the Creek.
Where a total of 10 people came.
See, that's the thing, man. Like, I actually that experience, I'm like, I've already told Brian Yang, who's going to be hosting my week at the Creek. I was like, hey, man, no matter who's in the audience, I want to start at 7:05 to make sure you and Dan Del Colle get, you know, enough time to work out your stuff, too. We'll just have fun, man. Like, no matter what, it might be one person, might be 10 people. We'll just have fun and rock it. I need to get the reps in, you know what I mean? I did a spot yesterday where I did 15 minutes easily. And I'm like, I just need to be able to have an avenue where I can really work on long sets because you don't get that in the city.
Yeah, and you'll find that it's going to help you because I've noticed, like, just doing that, like, that took me – I mean, it's hard to kind of put that in when you just feel like you're saying your stuff, your act into an abyss. Mm-hmm. But I found out, like, after doing that, like, I felt like my comedy kind of went to another level where it was just like, okay, now I'm not afraid to just talk.
Yes.
And just talk about the things that I want to talk about and having stories and telling them. And then you kind of like, once you get your reps in, you feel like you won't dread like, oh, I have to do 15 or I have to do, mm-hmm. I have to do 30. Like I have to do like maybe a half hour tonight. And you realize that, oh, I'm getting the light already, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's when I'm starting to actually feel like a real comic now, mm-hmm. because I've been doing spots like at some pretty good shows I had a spot a few weeks ago at New York Comedy Club and I had a feeling that I was doing pretty good when they're like, oh, you're going to do like 10. And I was like, all right, dope. Cool, do 10. And I ended up doing like 17 because the comic before me had a rough time and I guess I was able to win them back, the audience.
Okay.
And I was just having fun, man. I was just talking.
I didn't run the light.
At first, you know, New York Comedy Club's a weird room because you don't quite know where the light is. And it's like it's very hard to see because of the spotlight. It's right behind the spotlight.
Oh.
So at first I was like, is the light on? Like, what's going on? And then it did happen. And then I did my final story that I usually close with. And that's about a minute and a half or so. And then I look at, you know, you look at your recording because you're recording your set.
Yeah.
And it's like 17 minutes. And you're like, oh, shit. Okay. And then everyone's like, I'm like, you know, I clarify with the host. I'm like, I didn't run the light, right? He's like, no, man. I let you rock because you were killing.
Oh, okay. So as long as.
And so that's a good feeling when, you know, people are just like, let them keep going.
Yeah.
That's a really good feeling. So I want to like keep chasing that feeling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just don't be the black comic that runs the light.
I'm trying, man. But they need to hear these bars, Chris.
Yeah, well, they can hear them the next time you go up.
True. I'm really excited about a lot of the stuff I'm writing too because I feel like I'm finally getting my voice.
Yeah.
Where like I don't have to work out things too much because I kind of already know like my vibe that I have in my stories and just with structure.
Yeah.
So I can put things in that complement that.
That's good.
Yeah, man. What's your process when you're thinking about new jokes and material and like how that goes into your set?
I guess I just, I'll have like a bullet point. And if there's a certain phrase or something that I want to say, I'll write that down or I'll type it down in my Evernote. And, then I just go on stage and do it. I just think about the structure, mm-hmm. and I'll just listen, you know, do it, and then listen to it back and take things out and keep working on it. Like, 'cause some of the stuff that we worked on about the dating stuff, the cookies, the vegan,
oh, yeah, yeah,
vegan, vegan cookie bit, like that's kind of shaped into. Actually talking about going to your wedding and then that's become like a chunk.
Oh, okay.
So that's become a part of a dating chunk and ordering. Like, I have, like, fun with just, like, ordering how it goes into the act. So, like, I always, like, go by Chris Rock said this on, I think Chris Rock and Neil Brennan were talking about this on the Champs podcast, like, from years ago, where it's, like, you talk about like, it, in no real particular order, but you talk about different topics where you talk about politics, social stuff, maybe race, and then dating. Like that, like there's a dating chunk, racial shit, and then other stuff, miscellaneous, observational, and then you just kind of weave that in together to make an act, like to make an hour. So that's kind of like the format that I've been using.
Okay.
And so when I get, if I'm doing like I did a gig in Pennsylvania last week, and the night before I was working on, actually when I was in DC opening for Chad Daniels, I was just doing a bunch of trying to do my material. We did four shows and I had like 20 minutes. So I just switched up the set each time and to see how it sounded in front of like a paid crowd, you know, people that were paying for shit. So I could just do it when I was headlining this gig in Pennsylvania. So I just, you know, try to piece it all together, and that's about it. Cause I would like to do an album this year. We'll see.
Oh, that'd be dope. That'd be great, man.
Yeah, man. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. There's just a difference between performing in front of a free crowd and a paid crowd.
Yeah, man.
And you can tell like that. And you can always tell that in front of comics, you know, even if it's a packed house and it's a free show, you can always tell like a comedian that has never performed in front of a paid crowd, because they can still like dilly dally and like
what,
you know,
else?
Yeah, exactly. Or like they do things for the comics in the room versus the audience, because it's just a free show and they're like, oh, you know, we're having fun. It's like, yeah, if you're in a paid audience, they're gonna be like, cut that shit out, because I'm paying $25 a ticket, two drink minimum, get to the jokes, clown.
Yeah. It's true, man. You have to you have to use that other gear when you're working, when it's a paid show. I mean, you know, like you go in all the time. You perform.
Yeah.
You know, especially if it's a, like, I come from the theater, Brandon, and the performance is the performance. You're on stage and people are watching, you know, even at open mics, because that's just kind of how I started, because that's all that I knew. And the open mic was, yeah, you're doing it in front of your peers, and it's like practicing against the first team defense when you're at an open mic. And when I started at Ochi's Lounge, there was more of a safety net, but it was still other comics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a more of a, if you used it right, it was a good incubator to work on your craft. And then when that went away, it was kind of like the Wild Wild West, because the mics are just pretty fucking sad around the city.
Yes, they are, man. Dude, I went to an open mic, my first open mic in months, on Wednesday at the Stand. Mm-hmm. There's apparently, I haven't been to this mic in a while. It's hosted by Josh Homer. Okay. Shout out to the homie Josh.
Yeah.
But there's apparently this Dominican dude that's been going for weeks now, always wears shorts no matter what the weather is, and it literally sounds like a crazy man on the 6 train talking to himself but into a microphone.
Yeah.
But in a Dominican accent, and everyone's just there just like, yep, he does this every week. He rain or shine, he's here in shorts just rambling. And he's saying a lot of homophobic stuff. It was insane, and they're just like, yep, this is just what happens. And I'm like, at a certain point, that's not a good use of anyone's time.
It's not.
Like, this isn't good for me as a comedian that's just trying to work out some new stuff. Like, it's not good for the host. It's not good for that person to have this false hope that they're going to do whatever they are hoping to achieve with their homophobic Dominican rants.
Yeah, I was lucky around the time that I came up, because it was just sort of, you know, you had Ochi's Lounge, Sean Donnelly, mm-hmm. Chelsea White would host, Madison Perry, going there on Mondays, and that was like the thing. And it was like, you know, all those people, like, you would be there, like guys like, what is it, Mark Norman, Mike Lawrence,
Yeah.
Saint Germain, all those dudes, and other Christian Polanco would be there. A bunch of other comics, Ala Patel.
Okay.
And so those, you know, those people were about a year or two ahead, and you just kind of learn, you learn by watching, and then you try to avoid the bringer shows. I did a couple. I didn't do very many of them.
Okay.
I think I did less than five. I might have done, about five. New York Comedy Club.
Back when it was Al Martin, right?
Yeah, like Steve Ahrens used to
run. Oh, that's the guy who was blind, right?
No, I don't think, no, he wasn't blind.
He always looked at his phone really close to his eyes.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. He's a guy who needs glasses, but he pretty much puts his eyeball to the glass.
Oh, shit. On his phone.
Yeah, it's really weird.
So that was like that was 2009. And okay. I was doing a couple of those trying to figure stuff out. And then after Ochi's went away, they used to have Luca Lounge. And
I remember Luca.
And that was kind of it was okay. It was like the Morrison Motel, like John Morrison he produced those. Like Donnelly and Chelsea and Olop and those guys would run it. And then that went away. So I was going to mics in New Jersey doing like music open mics. Found a couple people like in Clifton.
Okay.
And I would do like coffee houses. And that was like doing stuff in front of real people. Like you're just, it's a show, really.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'd be the only comic and you just like work on stuff and you bomb. And I wasn't really getting booked at all. So I would go to DC, work at the Draft House. Their open mic was a show. It's like the equivalent of the Knitting Factory.
Just
a smaller room. Like the Arlington Draft House is like a movie theater, and they do comedy there on the weekends. You have national headliners come. First time I worked with like Hardwick and Mark Maron, Wyatt. And then they have a little side room where they have, it's a bar, and then they have a little stage and you work on your shit. And I would do that, and I would come back to New York being recharged and saying like, okay, well, I got to work with some cool headliners. Yeah. So I did feel like I was learning and stuff like that. And then you get booked on stuff, but it was just I was fortunate to get those reps in those types of places. But the stuff that really saved me was just doing those music open mics, like in Jersey and in Newark, all that shit. All of it helps. You know, you bomb and you have to figure that shit out, and have people come see you before they even probably should see you.
Mm-hmm.
Like friends and stuff. Like I didn't have too many friends come to see me.
I used to have a lot of people come out for me to bringers at comics.
Yeah.
I missed that room. That was a huge room.
I never performed on that stage.
It was fun, man. I got some good tapes there, but then I'm like, dude, if I had that platform now in my set, forget about it.
That was a place that was kind of fostering that downtown talent. That they were definitely, because that's where like they used to do those ECNY awards. They used to do like that was like the, the alt comedy awards and whatnot.
Yeah,
And that was a big deal. I was never that they were like that stuff was kind of dying out when I started, but you could definitely see that that stuff like when I started, Kumail was leaving. He was going to L.A. Like and Emily, I remember like walking to a show with them once and like they were just really nice. Like it was when I had just started to the first time that I got a hosting gig at fucking Lolita Bar, Liam McEnany, just started to work at like do Hannibal show and whatnot. And they were leaving. Like I remember Kumail about to go to L.A. And then I remember Pete Holmes like getting ready to go to L.A. This is like a Saturday show. And they was like, oh yeah, I saw you at the thing. And people's like, oh good. I hope you saw like a different, you got to see a couple different jokes. You know, he was just like a humble dude. I'm sure he's the same way or whatever. But he was like on his way out, like on his way to LA.
Okay. Yeah. Do you like crashing?
I do. I think he's too old. He's
thank you. He's no just, one says that.
He's like, you know, it would be better if it was a younger comic. Like, I get what they're doing. And then, you know, it's an accelerated thing where he's getting this success. But, you know, it's Apatow. It's got some heart to it. I definitely fucked with the last episode, the season two finale, where he's doing that show and he's just starting to get his sea legs, where he's like, he did well in that battle, the roast battle shit. But then he goes on the road and he does his college gig and he starts to like find himself.
Get his bones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm making that suspension of disbelief, you know, it's fine, you know, and Apatow's behind it. So it's got, you know, it's going to have some heart to it and it's fine. I hope I get cast on it next season to play. I can play a comic or I can just play a regular fucking dude, you know?
Yeah, that'd be great, man.
You know?
That'd be great. Shout out to Jamie Lee, man. I did not realize how bad she was. I was like, damn. Okay.
Oh, she's always been cute. I think she like, I remember seeing her for the first, I was like, oh, she's cute. And then she was like, my boyfriend. I was like, ah, fuck.
Ah, shit.
But did she used to be at Ochi? She used to be doing those alt shows down in that basement. All of those people, man. And it's not to say just because they got their turn, we're going to get, but like, those people are just now starting to, you see it, man. You know how this shit is. It's like you said earlier, it's like, it's that starting to go to the next level. You know, you don't know when it's going to happen for you, but you're starting to see the progress. I mean, you're doing shows all over the city. You have your own show that's at Union Hall, which is a good venue and stuff. And
yep, you're going to be on the next one, May 1st, Union Hall, 7:30. Don't think once, baby.
That's right. I did retweet the thing. Yeah. But they didn't put my new credits in the bio, but that's okay. To make me look like I ain't got nothing and shit. But you know, hey man, it's all good. But you know, so we are a part of the community now. We're entrenched in this thing for better or for worse.
Absolutely, man. The journey continues, man.
Yeah, man. You just have to keep going and enjoy it, take it for what it is, because it's been something that's helped me a lot the last like 9-10 years, just being a part of something outside of my everyday survival job that, you know, that may go away soon. So it's
so ominous.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things where if I didn't have that, then I feel like I would really be fucked up, like just mentally. You know what I mean? Like
okay.
You have to have that, because I talk about it a lot on the podcast, where I was living in Chicago. I was literally living my dream. I was acting. I had a day job. I was acting all the time, getting booked for a lot of stuff, not getting paid that much for the work, but I was doing it. I was honing my craft, learning, moved here, not working that much. And then to build something in one of the toughest cities in the country when it comes to showbiz, or just the fucking toughest city to do anything in.
Yeah.
And to be making headway and being on set, it's pretty, you have to look at that and say, like, that's no small feat. And to have the community of people where a lot of times, like yourself included, Mike, all those guys, you know, we have brunch with and shit, and all those other people that we work with, I found that it to be a stronger, this is really a fucking corny episode, but I found it to be, I found it to,
you just celebrate your wins, man. You got to celebrate your wins.
Yeah, that's true. I found it to be more more of a community than I had when I was an actor. Like, you know, you find I'm still an actor, but when I was entrenched in that life, because all of this shit is competitive, but it seems like comics are more prone to, even though this is a lone wolf type of practice, like stand up in and of itself, I found that I've told other people, like, comics are the people that book you. Those are the people that are giving you your next opportunities. Comedians got me opening for Chris Hardwick, Randolph, Terrence, and Andy Klein. Those dudes got me in with Chris Hardwick. They got me working with Wyatt, Mark Maron, all these people, and it helped. It enhanced my career. And then, you know, comics, you know, give you these opportunities to come up to take your game to the next level, man.
Yeah, man, that's why it's good to, like, we're all, like, constantly checking in on each other, seeing how, you know, one another's doing, because, you know, there are some really dark days.
Oh, yeah.
There's some times when you get slighted by other people in this industry, or you feel like, you know, you're not getting the support you deserve or the accolades you deserve. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, you have to choose your battles, right? Like, I talked a little bit, I told you, I think, about the Time Out New York podcast list. Did I tell you about what happened to me?
They have a podcast? Oh, their list of hot podcasts or whatever?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so initially, Medium Popcorn was listed on that, right?
Okay.
And there's a picture of Justin and I, and we were like, we're the only movie podcast on this list. It was like, we were like 11 out of 12, which is really dope, right? Okay. It was listed on the website and everything. A few weeks later, I go back to the link, and I realize we've been replaced by Defend Your Film, or Your Movie, which is hosted by Sean Donnelly. And I'm like, okay, so we got replaced by a white podcast that talks about films. Interesting, because I have the screenshot from the list and stuff still, right?
Okay.
But it's just weird. It's like, do I fight the person that made this listing, who also, whenever I reach out to my press releases for shows, always puts that in Time Out in New York when he can? Or do I just, like, move on from it? You know what I mean?
Move on from it.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I mean by choosing your battles.
Yeah.
Even when you see slides like that. I mean,
yeah,
it's whatever. You know, if people notice it, hopefully they say something. But it's like, Time Out in New York's not going to make or break Medium Popcorn. That's a podcast.
Right. You can still feature. You can still say featured in Time Out as one of
the. Oh, yeah. We definitely have. Like, our shows have been featured and stuff. But it's just like, that was kind of like a weird slight.
It is fucking weird.
Yeah, especially people replaced by a white podcast that's hosted by somebody who can't tell two black comedians apart. Oh, sorry. I'm just saying, he what if the Gordon Baker Bones said, "I like your movie podcast"? What can I say?
You guys look nothing alike.
Exactly. I don't know why people keep confusing us. Gordon and I literally look completely separate.
I don't know.
We don't have any similarities whatsoever. It may be the height. That's the only thing. But we out here, man.
Yeah, man. It's just you got to keep going, and you will do well in spite of that. You know, you got to laugh to keep from crying, man.
Exactly, man. I would be crying so much. You saw me at my wedding. I'd be crying like that every day.
Well, I was crying. So,
oh, that's sweet, man.
Yeah, I cried when.
Thank you for telling me that. Everyone else, like, you know, Mike Brown and people, were like, "Oh man, we were chuckling at you crying a little bit." I'm like, none of y'all got hearts.
Oh, I said that. Well, you know, I cried when you were doing your vows, but then I cried when the music changed, like, because it was like, "Oh, fun, happy, we're together," and the 3005 Childish Gambino, and then the music changed when you're. Sister-in-law started singing. I was like,
"Oh yeah, that was beautiful." Like, yeah, it was beautiful, right?
And it's like different when you see your buddy up there leveling up. I've talked about it on stage. I'm talking about it on stage. I'll do it at your show. It's nothing like making fun of you, but it's just like a real thing. But it's it makes you reflect. Like anything that happens, you reflect. You're happy for your friend, and then you're just like, oh, well, I need to get my shit together, maybe. you're like younger than me. And it's like, you know, but I think everybody has their time, you know?
Absolutely.
I listened to a guy like Bill Burr who he just had a kid, you know, his wife had a kid. He's about to be 50 this year.
Yeah. Man, Bill Burr, people know about Bill Burr, but I still think he's underrated right now.
Well, I don't know.
I think F for Family is a hilarious cartoon that no one's talking about. And also, I think that he's the reason why I kept watching season two of Crashing.
Well, yeah.
His episode was really good.
He's one of those guys where it's like, he's got that everyman quality to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's definitely one of my comedy heroes. Like when it's like as a kid, you know, like there's people that you admire before you start your craft. Like it's as far as stand up is concerned, obviously Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence, and Martin Lawrence too was like a superhero to me because he was from, my listeners know this, he's from my hometown and whatnot area.
Okay.
But like Bill Burr, like once you start, there's like, once I started and really started to, you know, study the greats, it was Burr, Louis, and Patrice.
Mm-hmm.
Like those three guys, like they're super talented comics, but they have this everyman quality about them where it's just like nothing is really changing when they step on stage. It's just like, obviously I always talk about that heightened performance level when you're on stage, but at the core it's just like the same guy, you know, it's just like the same guy that's off. You want to bring the offstage guy on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And have people and make that relatable, and I think that's what those guys do very well, and what Patrice did well, you know. But Burr is one of the greats. And we were talking about, like, and then you get to fucking work with him sometime. Like, getting to work with him was really cool.
Yeah, that's dope, man. You got that opportunity.
Yeah, it's like one of those, like, I got, like, a Make-A-Wish moment. Like, earlier on in the career. And then, like, to see him around and just kind of have a nice little chat with him. That shit is cool. It's cool what we do, man. And sometimes you have to remember how far you've come to even take you to that next level. And you have to appreciate that, you know?
Definitely, man. I appreciate like the friends I have in the industry. Like I recently been reflecting on like how great it is to have like, you know, you guys, you, Mike Brown, Justin Brown, stuff to really help me push myself. Cause I've been able to find like my comedy voice. I really feel like in the past year or so.
Yeah. Like we help each other, man. And it's God, this podcast is really corny today. It's true. Like I'm commenting on it, but you do have to tell people, because then if somebody dies, and it's like I never got to tell you. So you know.
Well, yeah, like for instance, right, the past like year or so, I think with Media Popcorn, I've like realized like, oh, like my whole thing is I don't really filter myself at all, which is probably going to be problematic. If like, you know, eventually my career takes on to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
But on that show, like I literally can say whatever immediately comes to mind, no matter how crazy it is. And you guys will obviously call me out on my insanity, but yeah, it's never like anything where I feel like I'm so judged that I stop talking.
Right.
Like if you hear some podcasts, some people will like say like a joke that bombs, or they'll say something that gets trashed on it. And then they just stop talking the rest of that episode.
Yeah.
It's like I never feel like that when I'm around like you guys, and that's really empowered me to kind of like start developing my unique comedy voice, I think, and that's been dope the past year.
Well, that's good. I mean, I think I think every year we just have to keep evolving. I know there's shit that I'm working on in my life, and it just helps the good stuff that happens, the stuff that you learn from your mistakes helps make you a better person.
Yeah, man, you got to embrace the potential, you know, wins and pitfalls, because I know you got some potential changes coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
And you just got to taste that shit because it might hurt. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? It's going to hurt a lot. It's going to hurt your buddy. It's going to hurt a lot, but you'll get through it, man.
Yeah. Well, talking to my parents and you guys, like it's been like kind of like, hey, maybe this is maybe whatever this is going to be good for me because I've gotten the whole thing around this podcast is a guy that kind of like you, I'm a comedian and an actor and stuff. You kind of flirting with show business. It's been like my mistress for a long time. And now show business is kind of like, yo, when we going to commit? When you going to commit? Like really made. Yeah. Like a lot of sacrifices have been made because of show biz, but
absolutely.
But I think it's almost time because there's been things that you have those moments where you are validated and that it's the right thing for you to do, and it's starting to happen. But I think I think there's still a fear too. I think there's that fear of the unknown that I still
have. But just utilize it if you find yourself in a position where like you know you have a lot of free time. For some reason, I'm not gonna embrace it because I remember I had a moment where I was given a lot of free time involuntarily.
Yeah,
and I kind of squandered it because I was so used to working since I was 13, like working all the time, and just that's that being part of my life. Mm-hmm. That I'm so adamant about getting another job versus like really embracing it and being a full time artist and really pursuing things. And I think if I had taken that approach that Tatiana had been encouraging me at the time, I might be in a different place in my career. But again, like I can't think about that too long because that's obviously in the past.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if there's any advice I can give to you with the potential changes coming through, definitely embrace that.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
As long as you don't start smoking crack, that's all we ask.
No. I won't be doing that. You got to have money for that.
Man, Chris's comedy's gotten so much more edgy lately.
Oh, shit.
The things I do for this rock, y'all don't even know.
Let's shift gears and then we'll wrap it up. I want to know, I've been asking, I feel like you're a comic book nerd to a certain degree, right?
Yeah. I'm actually about to read a comic right after we're done here.
Okay, now, what are your... do you have any predictions on Infinity War? Who's going to die? What do you think is going to happen?
Okay. So I have two predictions.
Okay.
But they contradict each other. So here's the thing. I think if they go the potential full storyline with Thanos, because I've heard that they filmed both this one and the next one back to back, right?
Okay.
Josh Brolin is playing Thanos in both of them. I think if he's able to achieve the full gauntlet and get all the gemstones, Infinity Stones, he will kill everybody. Mm. But the next Avengers will be someone having the power to reset the timeline and then like bring back certain characters. And I'm sure some will actually finally like fully die in the final battle with Thanos. But I think at the end of this one, possibly everyone might die. Because if you look at various trailers, right, there's the big battle, the big epic battle in Wakanda, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's some trailers where it scorched Earth and Tony's like shook. And like Thanos is like beating the dog shit out of him and Spider-Man. I think Wakanda gets leveled, right? Because he kills everybody. Mm. And then they use the next one to reset. And I think that'd be a dope storyline for like someone like Spider-Man. Because imagine you're a 16-year-old kid and you've died before and you remember that.
Shit.
And then like that's the reason why you don't want to be Spider-Man. It's not because like, you know, you don't have the powers or you're stressed. It's literally like, I'm afraid of dying again. So I think that'd be an epic sequel premise for him, but if I were to pick people that I think will definitely die, it will be Thor, Captain America, and probably Hawkeye and Loki.
Hawkeye's not even in the poster, is he? I know people were making fun of that.
Yeah. I mean, I Jeremy Renner probably pissed off somebody. But neither is Paul Rudd, and I think Paul Rudd's in the movie too.
Oh, Ant-Man's in it too?
I think Ant-Man's in the movie. Okay. Because I think Ant-Man the Wasp might actually be a prequel, like a prequel to Infinity Wars. But we'll see when that movie comes out in July.
Yeah.
But I think timeline-wise, it has to be before Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm.
What do you think's going to happen?
I don't know. I'm asking everybody because I don't have any. Like, I don't know anything about the books. But I'm hearing something like what you're saying about the reversal thing, like bringing people back to life. Because like in Doctor Strange, when he kept dying and then
yep.
coming back and all that stuff. So
I think that'd be the ball. I mean, I think that would be a really dark way to end. Yeah. But they've been doing enough. People have been doing interviews where they've been hinting at like it's going to be pretty rough.
Yeah,
that I think they have the ability to really go balls to the wall, kill everybody, but then have the confidence next year we're bringing back quite a few people, and that'll be their official swan song.
Because Black Twitter's going to be mad when they fuck up Wakanda,
yeah. Like, here's this place you guys loved a few months ago. Now it's gone.
Because we're going to be mad. And I was talking to another comic about it, how those black people that love Black Panther, they're probably going to get more people to come to see Avengers Infinity War.
Definitely.
Now,
that's why they're featured so much in the trailers now.
Yeah, yeah. Now, are you going to see, how are you going to see this? Are you going to do the Thursday night thing? Or?
Yeah, so as soon as the creek is over, 7 to 8, I'm heading to the movie theater. I'm seeing a 9 o'clock show.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah, I have to see. Yeah, I have to do that, too, because I'm going to an 8:30, and I can't have people spoiling that shit on Twitter.
No, I really can't. You know there's going to be some asshole that spoils it.
I'm going to do my thing and take a nap and and then watch the shit on Thursday.
Yeah, because supposedly it's 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Wow.
And that's not including previews. You know they're going to stack shit on that.
Well, I mean, Black Panther was 2.5, right?
It was like 2 hours and 20, I think.
Okay. Well, Black Panther wasn't a short. But
yeah.
I didn't feel it with that one because I saw it the next day, like less than 12 hours later, I saw it again. And I didn't feel the time in that one. And I think maybe we won't feel it in this one because there's so many characters and you got to think everybody's got to get their one shining moment. So, yeah, we'll see. Well, Brandon, plug your stuff, man. Plug the stuff you got going on, and we'll wrap it up, man.
Absolutely, man. I got The Week at the Creek starting on Monday, April 23rd to Friday, April 27th, 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. I'm going to be doing a half hour talking about my life, my recent marriage, Harry Potter, growing up in Ann Arbor. It's going to be dope. So if you're a fan of this conversation or I've heard my podcast, Media Popcorn, Niggas Spoiling Movies, with my co-host Justin Brown, or the Comedy Outliers podcast with my co-host Mike Brown. Definitely come through. It's a Creek in the Cave in Long Island City. And then the following Tuesday, May 1st at 7:30 at Union Hall, I have Don't Think Once. It's going to be the Black Avengers edition. Chris Lambert's on that show. Good buddy Dylan Stevenson's on that. Shalewa Sharp's on that. Jordan Carlos. It's a stacked lineup, so you definitely want to come through to that as well.
Yeah, that's that's a murderer's row, bro.
Yeah, and everything's on anamericancollins.com for any ticket links and all that stuff.
Why American Collins? I never asked you that.
I don't know, man. It's just like it was an easy thing. I want everything to be Frodo Blackens, but then Dan Soder, who is like one of my favorite New York comedians, mm-hmm. I remember talking to him, and he was like, hey, man, I really like you. He's like Frodo Blackens is a funny name, but I'm not gonna follow you on Twitter. It's like, oh man, it's sad. So I changed it, and then he followed me, so everything's good.
Shout out to Dan Soder for making Brandon change that. Well, Brandon, this has been a fucking,
thanks so much, man, for having me on.
Fucking delight, man. This might have been the most saccharine episode ever.
Yeah, it's sentimental time.
It's okay.
It gotta make you feel good, man. I hear this episode, this show sometimes, and you sometimes sometimes tiptoe into JO territory. So I want to prick you up a little bit.
Well, you know, I would say that JL and I are not that different from each other. in some respects, we are, but I would be remiss if I didn't say that sometimes there's a dark cloud around, you know, but I think we all grapple with that, you know?
Absolutely. I definitely sense it sometimes with you, like you have subtleties. Whereas J.O.'s like, one day I'm going to end my comedy career by just, you know, this podcast, you just be hearing gunshot and a body hitting the floor.
Yeah, I don't.
And I told him, I tell J.O. all the time when I say, I'm like, your podcast is going to be like an archive of stand-up comedy because it's one of the like most brutally honest like things about the frustration of the business. But it's one of the, like, the saddest things ever because he talks about different ways he's going to kill himself to get out of the industry.
Yeah, I don't think I can. I can't take it there. I'm not. I have no. I don't know, man. What I will say is that everybody deals with. Everybody's got their shit.
Absolutely.
And I try to make this as pleasant as possible, and entertaining. But yeah, man, that's how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Chris. I really appreciate it, bro.
No doubt, man. Stay on the line, and I'm wrapping this up now. So thanks, Brandon, for your time, and everybody, talk to you next week. All right.